So this is just a refresher from yesterday. This is a series of verses from Lord Kapila Dev to Devahuti, describing stages of consciousness, kind of like evolutionary scale kind of talk, based upon anatomy, or the bodily development is a reflection of consciousness development according to species. The stepping back, the understanding is the importance of seeing Supersoul within every living being and offering charity and extending friendship as appropriate to that living entity. So now there's grades of living entities. Consciousness is at the foundation, basis, and then forms of life reflect stages of consciousness. So we heard yesterday, spirit or conscious soul is of a different quality. It's superior to dull matter. And then there were three. Then living entities that display life symptoms are superior to those that don't. Then sense perception. Animals. There's four. Animals with developed consciousness are better than those that just show life symptoms. Like, let's say, a one-celled living entity or something like that. There's life within that one-celled living entity, but animal life is superior. And then goes next is those that have developed sense perception. That was yesterday. Now text 29 and 30. Among the living entities who have developed sense perception, those who have developed a sense of taste are better than those that have developed only the sense of touch. Better than them are those who have developed the sense of smell. And better still are those who have developed the sense of hearing. Then text 30. Better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish between one form and another. That's sight. Better than them are those who have developed upper and lower sets of teeth. And better still are those who have many legs. Better than them are quadrupeds, four legs. And better still are the human beings. The short purports for those verses. Although Westerners accept that Darwin first expounded the doctrine of evolution, the science of anthropology is not new. Development of the evolutionary process was known long before, from the Bhagavatam, which was written 5,000 years ago. There are records of statements of Kapila Muni, who was present almost in the beginning of creation. This knowledge has existed since Vedic time. And all these sequences are disclosed in Vedic literature. The theory of gradual evolution, or anthropology, is not new to the Vedas. Paragraph. It is said here that among the trees there are also evolutionary processes. The different kinds of trees have touch perception. It is said that better than the trees are the fish, because the fish have developed a sense of taste. Better than the fish are the bees, who have developed a sense of smell. Better than them are the serpents, because the serpents have developed a sense of hearing. In the darkness of night, a snake can find its eatables simply by hearing the frog's very pleasant cry. The snake can understand, there's a frog. captures the frog simply because of its sound vibration. This example is sometimes given for persons who vibrate sound simply for death. One may have a very nice tongue which can vibrate sound like frogs, but that kind of vibration is simply a calling, is a simply calling death. The best use of the tongue and of sound vibration is to chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That will protect one from the hands of cruel death. That was purport for 29. And then, those who can perceive sound better than those, they can distinguish one form from another. Purport, it is said that certain birds, such as crows, can distinguish one form from another. Living entities have many legs, like the wasp, are better than the plants and grasses which have no legs. Four-legged animals are better than the many-legged animals, and better than the animals is the human being who has only two legs. 31. Among human beings, the society which is divided according to the quality and work is best. And in that society, the intelligent men, who are designated as Brahmanas, are best. Among the Brahmanas, one who has studied the Vedas is the best. And among the Brahmanas who have studied the Vedas, one who knows the actual purport of the Vedas is best. Purport, this system of four classifications in human society according to quality and work is very scientific. The system of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras has now become vitiated. Dictionary? Vitiated? Huh? You got one. Okay, go ahead. Just look it up. V-I-T-I-A-T-E-D. As the present deviated.
Huh? It's past and something from the past. It's spoiled or impaired the quality or efficiency.
Something from the past that has become spoiled in the present.
Spoiled, yes.
Spoiled. Okay. Has now become spoiled as the present caste system in India, but it appears that this system has been current a very long time, since it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Unless there is such a division of the social orders of human society, including the intelligent class, martial class, mercantile class, and laborer class, there is always confusion as to who is to work for what purpose. A person trained to the stage of understanding the absolute truth is a Brahmana, and when such a Brahmana is Veda Gya, a knower of the Vedas, he understands the purpose of the Veda. The purpose of the Veda is to understand the Absolute. When you understand the Absolute Truth in three phases, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and who understands the term Bhagavan to mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered to be the best of the Brahmanas or Vaishnava. That's the next verse. Better than the Brahmanas, this is text 32. Better than the Brahmana who knows the purpose of the Vedas is he who can dissipate all doubts. And better than him is one who strictly follows the Brahminical principles. Better than him is one who is liberated from all material contamination. And better than him is a pure devotee who executes devotional service without expectation of reward. report. Artha Gya Brahmana, Sanskrit of this verse, refers to one who has made a thorough analytical study of the Absolute Truth and who knows that the Absolute Truth is realized in three different phases, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. If someone not only has this knowledge but is able to clear all doubts if questioned about the Absolute Truth, he is considered better. Further, there may be a learned Brahmana Vaishnava who can explain clearly and eradicate all doubts, but if he does not follow the Vaishnava principles, then he is not situated on a higher level. One must be able to clear all doubts and simultaneously be situated in the Brahminical characteristics. Such a person who knows the purpose of the Vedic injunctions, who can employ the principles laid down in the Vedic literatures, and who teaches his disciples in that way, is called an acharya. The purpose of an acharya is that he executes devotional service with no desire for elevation to a higher position in life. Last paragraph. The highest perfectional Brahmana is the Vaishnava, a Vaishnava who knows the science of the Absolute Truth, but is not able to preach such knowledge to others, is described as being in the lower stage. One who not only understands the principles of the science of God, but can also preach, is in the second stage, and one who not only can preach, but who also sees everything in the Absolute Truth, and the Absolute Truth in everything, is in the highest class of Vaishnavas. It is mentioned here that a Vaishnava is already a Brahmana. In fact, the highest stage of Brahminical perfection is reached when one becomes a Vaishnava. Well, there are similarities and there's certainly differences between the Srimad Bhagavatam's understanding or conception of evolution and Darwin's conception. Evolution of consciousness, and corresponding with evolution of consciousness, evolution of forms of life based upon illumination or activation of sense perception of different orders, and then progressing, you know, beyond any Darwinian idea of evolution of consciousness up to full realization of the Absolute Truth. This is the Vedic conception. Which is not without making the contrast portion. That's not Darwin's idea of evolution. Central to the idea of the Vedic conception of evolution is the whole Sankhya system. And the theist, there's also an atheist Sankhya system. But a theist Sankhya system is the categories of matter, and over here is the categories of spirit. And spirit is the conscious entity within the body, and then grades of consciousness, depending upon this varna and ashram. Varna indicates activity, guna and karma, quality and activity. The varnashram system is a system that those who are in elevated consciousness, it's a symptom, something that, that on occasion Prabhupada would say is, one cannot be understood as having entered into the human form of life until one accepts that standard of regulation according to the social structure for elevation of consciousness. Prior to that acceptance, one is not yet, from the Vedic conception, human being yet, still animal-like, meaning driven by the senses. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, the animal propensities, doing in a polished manner, but not without the principle of organization of society for the purpose of spiritual elevation, according to the plan that Krishna has given or the Creator has given for human life. It's not from the Vedic conception. Not yet human. And then within the human, there are these four orders, and topmost is the Brahmana, and of the Brahmana, those that are living by brahminical principles and can clear any understandings, misunderstandings. Then perfect in devotion, topmost. Quite a spread. Inanimate, and then animate, and then those that are show life symptoms, and so on and so on. So, go back to the starting premise: respect, friendliness, and acts of charity should go to all. As a standard for devotional service. And by means of that way of life, living that way of life, the indication is given previously. Progressively, realization may come. It's interesting to see how Prabhupada has, in his purports, I'm sure it's taken directly from statements of our acharyas, but those that can detect sound and those that can detect the power of the senses, you know, taste, aquatics, in many circumstances, Prabhupada has explained that the strength of the fish is taste, so the way to capture the fish is through taste. So the fisherman captures the fish by some bait, and then the fish goes for the bait, and then they get the hook instead of the bait, because they're controlled by the tongue, by that taste. So it's that stage of consciousness of taste is superior to those that haven't developed it. Then the sense of smell. Interesting example, the bee. The fragrance of pollen or something. So the bee goes there. So not knowing that there's also the future of the flower may close, the bee may get caught in the lotus flower or some flower when the sun goes down and buzz, 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 and they may die, captured by that sense. And then the sense of hearing. So, like that. Forms of life distinguished by development of senses, and then with those development senses, more evolved consciousness. So the human form of life has all five senses reasonably well developed, although Prabhupada would say the sense of smelling of a dog is superior to that of a human, the sense of hearing in other forms of life more developed, more acute at least, more pronounced than in the human form of life. But at least, you know, the equipment of developed five senses that are developed and the capacity to understand the absolute truth is there within the human form of life, unlike the other forms of life. So by design, that's what it's meant for. It can be used other ways. Give somebody $1 million or they win the lottery and they're not a qualified person. Most persons who would participate in the lottery are not so elevated. But if they receive that, you know, the prize, they don't know how to handle the resource, that the developed consciousness of the human form of life can easily be misused, is the point. And when it's misused, human society, human individuals can do very hurtful things to themselves and to others because their consciousness is more developed. So that goes on. But human form of life, if used properly, can be very elevated. Very, 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 very great asset. Great benefit. And then there's gradations of those persons. Those that study the Vedas, those that know the purpose of the Vedas, those that can explain the purpose of the Vedas, those that can remove doubts of others about the message of the Vedas, those who live by the standards of Brahminical culture, those who are then pure devotees of the Lord. Who executes devotional service without expectation of reward. Interesting. That means passion has subsided. Because passion, the mode of passion, impels one to do things to get something for oneself. What do you do with that? Impetus to do something to get something for yourself. Even if you replace it with, I don't want to do that anymore, then you're still doing something for yourself. I don't want the degradation or the bondage of doing things for myself. Where do you go with that one? You know, then it becomes a liberationist. It's a spiritual aspiration. But if service to Krishna, if you don't have the capacity to repose that tendency to do something for some purpose, repose that upon Krishna. That Krishna should be pleased by this endeavor. If you don't have that shelter of doing for Krishna's pleasure, then the spiritual destination is impersonalism or voidism. Almost by default. And I don't want to be here, so it's definition by negation. You end up in this nothingness space or impersonal space. And there's a lot of that out there in the spiritual marketplace. Just a little sharing before coming to Boston. I was at the University of Texas just before coming to Boston, in Austin, Texas. And nice gathering, nice group of students. They'd done a fantastic job gathering the group. And three different students were asking, in different language, the same question. The same question was like trying to fit impersonalism into Krishna consciousness. Like, you know, isn't it that I've read literatures that say, and then fill in the blank, and it's you become God, or we are God. And that's the literature that they're reading, I guess, you know, varieties of ways of saying the same thing. So we just had a little gentle and spontaneous discussion about impersonalism. And then as the message is here, these stages, that's a perspective on the realm of spirit, the Brahman picture of higher reality. But then, yogis, they know this Paramatma feature, and then devotees, they know the personal feature. So now we have these three features as beyond duality. You're familiar with this one, but according to the message of Bhagavad Gita, that rests upon the personal feature, Bhagavan. And I showed them the verse from Bhagavad Gita, which they had never heard before. They've heard the other a whole bunch. Different persons. Different, very... You have to listen very carefully to the language of when people speak the thing of impersonalism, but it's impersonalism. It's, you know, beyond this realm into another realm, and the other realm takes you to the position where, I mean, one of them was saying, you know, basically we're all God. It's like little fragmental pieces of God put us all together, and that's God. We're all God. In other ways, the rivers flowing into the ocean, example. That's a classic impersonal. The river is a river, but the river eventually flows into the ocean. It's all part of the ocean, and we're all one. So life is a river, and our movements of life are like rivers. And then, you know, in the final analysis, it's all one. Different creative ways of saying the same thing. To take persons who have become acquainted with and even bought into that impersonal picture of things, it can be difficult to move them from that position. At least consider, okay, there's Brahman, now there's Paramatma, now there's Bhagavan, just as the verse is saying. A complete picture of the Absolute Truth is these three features are there, not just one or two, but three features, and it's all part of the Absolute Truth. And nice big pause, it's all part of the Absolute Truth, and the other features rest upon the personal feature. And on that basis, we engage in devotional service to the Supreme Person. And when doing so, the limitations of consciousness are lifted, and one's consciousness expands, or one consciousness becomes maximized. Like just at the end last night, standing by the elevator, that tall American fellow, wanted to know, would you say that, you know, the path to Krishna is the only way? I said, no, I wouldn't use that language. I said, I explained these three aspects. There's an impersonal, you'll hear it out there. That's a path. People follow that path. Then there's a path where people are interested and they're all of a transcendental nature. And then there's the personal feature. And Krishna is the name of the person. And you, from becoming acquainted with the person, through the Vedic literature, you can know his form. And you can know his activities. And you can know of his loving exchanges. And you can not only know of them, you can go there. You can participate eternally. And that's the objective. Whether it's this method, that method, that's the objective. So I don't know how a new person's going to digest all of that. During our program, ISKCON 50 program celebration in Houston, there was a panel of three, and the question we were to speak on is, what are the gifts that ISKCON has given to the world? And the third speaker, I spoke, Wataji spoke. Interesting what she said. Rumbaru is by profession, is some kind of counseling involved in the medical profession. And she said, the gift is the four regular principles. And then she explained that people that don't have those things, their lives become destroyed. And she gave examples from her medical practice, or medical professional practice. This and that and that and that. And, you know, so much money is spent, so lives are destroyed, people struggle. And the simple solution is the regular principles. So Prabhupada has given us a healthy, wholesome, you know, crazy-free situation just by these regular principles. Regular principles of freedom, Prabhupada would call it. That was a wonderful gift. That was her contribution. And then Bhakti Sundar Maharaj, mine was that Prabhupada made it very clear that God is a person. And a few other things. So Bhakti Sundar Maharaj kind of went, you know, off in a tangent. He was describing, he is an example, his life is an example of the gift that Prabhupada gave, which is, you know, conditioned souls that were lost and bewildered, a chance to find a means to reach life's goal. And then he said, I'm an example. And then he started telling this life story. In short, this, I very quickly shared this with this fellow last night, that he was eight children before him, mother and father's children, died shortly after their birth. And so they were devastated, eight children, one after the next. So their mother and father prayed to God, you please give us a child and we will offer this child in your service. And they meant it. That was the first child that survived, and he was that first child. So when he became a young man, they enrolled him in a Jesuit monastery. He was being trained to become a Jesuit monk. And in the course of his student life, he's like, you know, 14 years old, 13, 14 years old, and reading that man, according to the Bible, man is created in the image of God. So we went to the teacher, the priest, and said, it says this in the Bible. Can you tell me about the image of God or the form of God? And the priest said, nobody knows the form of God. And Bhakti Sundar Maharaj said, I wasn't satisfied with that. It says, this is how somebody must know. I want to find that somebody that knows. As a teenager, he was on this quest of finding the form of God. Then, you know, story and things happened and things happened and things happened. And then he met a devotee. And the devotee, invited him to take a book. He liked the book. How do I find out more about this? Come to our center. I think it was in Caracas, Venezuela, somewhere. And when he walked into the temple, he saw a picture of Radha and Krishna. He asked, who's this? That's God. And there's his form. I said, oh. Tell me about the form of God. And the form of God. So I like this. I've been looking for that explanation of the form of God. How do you know what this is the form of God? How is the form of God different than the form of man? And you know, like, you know, inquisitive, and everything that he heard that it just resonated. So he continued his practice of Krishna consciousness. So that's a gift, big gift. To understand, so to understand how to render devotional service without self-interest, without expectation of reward, is the language here. And it's taught at the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, karma yoga, work without attachment for the results of your work. Easier said than done. How do you work without attachment for the results of your work? The solution is the results go to Krishna, because you're working for some result. It's like you go to school, you want to do well in your exam, and so forth, and your career, you want to do well in your career, and your and everything. So we do things with some purpose of the result. Now, how do you not detach the result? You offer the result to Krishna. Quite simple, principle-wise. One can actually accomplish that. That's not just a detachment muscle, it's a devotional muscle. The offering to Krishna. The attachment to Krishna. Wishing to please Krishna. Because the other is largely, I don't want the entanglement. I don't want the misery. It goes with entanglement and attachment. It's tough. Two of the students last night, that, you know, their question at the end was, I'm stressed. And I want to be not stressed. You know, the girl, and then the tall fellow, Indian fellow, you know, second year graduate student, came from Seattle, because Northeastern apparently has a branch in Seattle, so now he's here. Brahman, you know, chances Gayatri was describing, you know, but stressed. So how do I turn stress into productivity? You make your sincere effort to please Krishna. Not like he being born in a Brahmin family and having some training, he's apparently still chanting his Gayatri, hasn't heard something like that before. But a Brahmana is one who knows Brahman, and a mature Brahman is one who knows Krishna, and you keep going. You become a pure devotee Krishna. So you do what you do. You strive for pleasing Krishna. It's challenging sometimes, but you strive for your pleasing Krishna. And one who lives by that principle becomes purified by living by that principle, by Krishna's mercy. We connect with Krishna by that principle, and Krishna's supreme pure existence purifies us. And then, so the next verse is kind of like a summary of all of that. Therefore, any questions or discussion?
Yeah. The discussion on the evolution, I felt, was a little confusing, because first is that yesterday we discussed how plants can also see and smell, and now we are talking about plants having a sense of touch, and then higher than that is fish who has got
taste,
and that means the plants do not have and then higher goes essentially.
It's not elaborately explained, so I can't say. The only thing that out of this kind of discussion, there's senses that are more developed, less developed. Mm-hmm. So for example, the sense of sight of a tree is less developed in the sense of sight of creatures that have eyes. They also have sight. The tree has some. It responds to light. So it indicates there's some sense. And then more developed and more developed and more developed. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my sense of how that works.
Another source of confusion was coming from that Padma Puran verse where the Jalada Navalakshani Stava Lakshabhimshati.
Yeah.
In that first sequence, I thought that that's evolutionary succession, that's how it is presented. And there, the aquatics are placed lower than the trees and plants. But here, the trees and plants are placed lower than the aquatics.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it's not, this is not, I don't read this particular section as you just described, like linear as you just described. So let's go back to 28. Living entities are superior to inanimate objects. Living entities who display life symptoms are better than those that don't. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them. And better still are those who have developed sense perception. So that, to me, sounds like a standalone statement. And then, you know, kind of backtracking, not, and then, but so then those that have sense perception, just like the unfolding of the elements, mm-hmm. then there's the sense that perceives those elements. Mm-hmm. Among living entities that have developed sense perception, those that have the sense of taste are better than those that develop the sense of touch. So they're not, this verse isn't connected linearly to the previous verse. It's like describing another approach to the development of sense perception. It's going back to that those that have sense perception are better than those that don't. And there's degrees of developing sense perception.
And also, as I was hearing, I was trying to relate to like how creation happens from subtle to gross, and in that succession, there is a sound sensation, then there is touch, and then there is sight, and then
yes, confusing.
And I was thinking that the
one would have to, it seems to me that one would have to invest a lot of very deep contemplation on the connection between the subtle and the next less subtle and the next less subtle and the next less subtle and how that domino effect works. And then knowing that, how it works compared to the evolution of species, I mean, I haven't gone there yet. And I can't respond so well. But I understand the question. It would seem how it all fits together, I can't explain. I haven't studied it carefully. And obviously this is a high-level presentation. It's not a detailed-level presentation. And, you know, If there's some seeming inconsistency in the high level description, you'd have to start going into the detailed presentation of that high level to sort it out. And it's not provided. The detail, there is detail in chapter 26 of the elements, the unfolding of the elements and the senses of perception of those elements. Not in species, the sense, the development of the senses and the hierarchy of species. I'm sure it's somewhere within the Vedas, but it's not here. Anything else? Yeah?
In the process of practicing Krishna consciousness, can we jump from the lowest level sutra? To
Vaishnava.
To Vaishnava, just keep the Brahmana stage, or we have to go through Brahmana. We have to go level by level to Brahmana and then.
Both are possible, and keeping it really simple, Prabhupada gave this example. If you want to go to the top of a tall building, use the Empire State Building. If you want to go to the top of a tall building, you can go by the stairs, or you can go by the elevator. And there is a stair method for elevation, and there's an elevator method. And ours is an elevator method. That is, someone who's born lower than Sudra, someone who is unqualified, no sense control, no sense of social order, can be given access to devotional service, chanting of the holy name, and activities of devotional service, and become elevated very quickly. That it very quickly is a relative statement. It may take some time, but one can be engaged in Vaishnava activities, and then the qualities come, rather than you birth after birth after birth, because literally that's what it takes. By the stairway method, one may come to the position of being Brahmana, birth after birth that it becomes. So that's the stairway method. And there are some Vaishnavas that adhere to that stairway method. And ours is the position of the elevator method. So to become brahminically qualified, it takes some time of practicing devotional service. Therefore, what the arrangement that Bhakti Siddhanta made and Prabhupada made is, anyone can chant and engage in service, and after some time one becomes initiated in the chanting of the holy name, and then after some further purification and study of scripture, one may be awarded political initiation. But you don't have to change the activity, you just get in the elevator. While you're in the elevator, you don't need different, but in the stairway method you do. Different duties, different requirements. It's merciful. This elevator method is directly like this very strong flow of descending mercy comes into the life of one just is ready to receive it. And then one who's not Brahmana by quality can become Brahmana by quality. In a short time. And even more than, like it's described here, more than Brahmana, because one of the requirements of Brahmana is one who knows Brahman, or spirit. The one who knows Krishna through the medium of devotional service is the topmost of amongst the Brahmanas. Very quickly that qualification can come. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
the trees and animals have a lesser consciousness compared to the living
human
beings. So how is that it happens that some of the trees or animals are some way associated with the devotees, and they get either the prasadam or they get...
That's just the mercy of the devotees.
And how
it's
how
just
they are
the mercy of the devotees.
How are they differentiated from the other trees or animals who are not...
They didn't get the mercy of the devotees. We need more devotees who have that sense of offering their food to Krishna and then giving prasadam to the animals. Or watering the tree with, you know, Abhishek water or something. Or, chanting. I often think of, in the Chicago temple, there's a tree. You know, how fortunate is that tree? I have so many trees that he's there in every single arti. Every kirtan that goes on in that temple, everyone that chants the Maha Mantra, he's hearing the Maha Mantra. Woo, woo. How did that, you know, how fortunate is that tree? How special is that tree? So now, what if, your question is, what about the other trees?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't receive that good fortune. We could fill the temple room up with more trees.
The confusion that I had was because they don't abide by the karma and all that processes. So how is that some trees are fortunate enough and some trees are not?
It's the same question you're asking. It's not a different question. It's the same answer. How does one come in contact with bhakti? By the compassion of one who's carrying bhakti. That's how it happens. Now you're looking for a cause, and that's the cause. So don't ask it again. Fourth time. It's causeless. It's be, you know, the injunction of the devotee to be merciful, and so the devotee's merciful, and some are recipients, they're proximate recipients. And some are distant, you know, they're not recipients. It's not a, there's no other cause besides the mercy of a devotee, period. So become merciful devotee. go for japa walks in forests and benefit the trees. Give charity to the trees. Okay, I think we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.